Well, I mentioned Chuck Voigt. Chuck is here. So is Diane Noland, a couple of our favorite gardeners. They're here to take your telephone calls at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. So we look forward to your questions, comments, ideas about gardening this afternoon. We can talk about herbs, vegetables, ornamentals, anything that you've got growing out there, 217. Well, you don't need to use that number, 800-222-9455 and 333-9455, the numbers to call if you'd like to talk with Chuck and Diane. Hi.
Hello there.
It's good to see you. It feels like summertime out there. Is it time for tomatoes and basil?
Yes, it is.
Great.
In fact, I just planted a flat of basil. And only four tomatoes plants so far.
I think I've held myself down to 30.
Well, I've just begun to plant. It's good to be here so that actually Chuck and I will end up getting some rest because it's been nonstop planting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the weather has actually been, I mean, now it's quite warm, but it has been really great for being out there and working.
The cool, you know, is nice.
The cool weather, that makes the work go a little
and less humid
more
until
quickly,
just recently.
Just now, yeah. Although Ed says some dry weather is coming in.
Yeah, we're going to separate the truly ambitious from the cool weather ambitious in the coming week, it sounds
like. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it's much warmer than this. I'm not too as interested.
But the basil and tomatoes and peppers really like it, and sweet potatoes. So it's
sweet
coming
potatoes.
Into that season.
Okay. How many sweet potatoes have you got going this year, Chuck?
66.
Wow.
Varieties.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with the two of you. Let's go first to Champagne, line one. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi there.
I was wondering, my wife, when she mows the lawn and bags the clipping, she goes and she dumps it around our trees, around the tree stems. And some places it's getting pretty thick. And I'm wondering, is that a good thing, a bad thing, a don't worry about it kind of a thing?
If she continues to do that, she might want to leave an area by the trunk that's maybe just 3 or 4 inches, and then she could mound it up a little bit farther out and make it just a wider ring as she goes.
Okay.
And it's good to have the aged ones underneath and the ones that are fresh and not aged on top. But over time, that will, if it gets in contact with the soil, it will rob nitrogen from the soil. So you want to make sure it's always got aged in between before you drop the new on top.
Okay, does it matter if it's a conifer or a deciduous tree?
No, I wouldn't think so. Over time, the conifer may, and I know pine needles will make it a little acidic, but the mixture probably would keep it moderated.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana. Line two, hi.
Good afternoon. We have a garden in Urbana that we're really worried about because of the squirrels. Can you give us any advice on how to grow things and not have the squirrels eat most of what we're growing?
Oh, that's a million-dollar question.
Chuck? Go, Chuck.
I'm suddenly the squirrel expert.
I don't know.
That's tough. That's tough. I've heard people say if you feed them, they don't. They might not eat things as much, but if you feed them, you're going to attract more of them. So I can't, I've never had a lot of faith in that. Urbana would frown on it if you started plugging them, so that's probably not a good idea.
No, that's not a good idea.
I suppose there are, you know, repellents that you could try at your local.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I know people, if you're willing to be diligent, things like blood meal, I think, can give you a little bit of repellent activity. There might be some of those, what is it, Ropel, that supposedly repels rodenty kinds of things like furry-tailed
like
tree rats.
Something like a mix up a hot sauce kind of a treatment. But you do have to stay on top of that because once it rains, you've got to do it over again.
Well, it's kind of the same thing with the blood meal. And when it's fresh and stinks, say they get the idea that maybe something died around here. But as soon as it rains it in, then it's good nutrition for the soil, but it ceases to be a repellent once that happens. So, yeah, that's why I say you have to be diligent with it.
Cages, are there any kind of cages you could put around, like, say, tomatoes and, you know, that kind of thing that are really, because they can climb.
You can cage them, but it really, you know, it's what you want your yard to look like, too. That's
and anything
challenging.
Anything you would cage a tomato with would cage you out when you try and trying to pick the tomatoes, too, so that gets to be a little old.
Okay. It's rather challenging. And in fact, there are so many squirrels in Urbana, it seems like. I live in the country, and we just don't have the problem. Of course, we have deer. You know, you have one thing or another.
Yeah.
But some of those things may help, and a lot of people will mix and match them. They don't do one all the time, try to keep them, you know,
guessing.
Off guard,
yeah.
Keep them guessing.
Yeah, anything they get used to there is going to be less effective.
Yeah, go ahead, caller.
I know, I was just going to think, I'll be offline, I'll listen to the rest of your comments. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for the call. One year I had a little bit of luck with coffee grounds that I got from a coffee shop. You know, they have all those grounds after making all the coffee drinks. And that actually was somewhat effective. But I think if you vary it a little bit, that's also helpful. So that's another idea. How about we talk with another listener? Line 4. Mattoon, hi.
Hi. Thank you. In my flower bed, I have something that is eating my seedlings. And I wonder if you had any idea what it is. I've planted zinnias 3 times, and when they get to be about an inch or an inch and a half, you know, the little round leaves, something takes crescent-sized shape bites out of the leaves, and eventually the whole thing just disappears. And I don't know whether I've got cutworms. I don't know what I've got. Do you have any idea?
Well, cutworm would cut it off at the base of the stem, not the leaves.
Well, I've seen a little of that, but not much. Mostly it's the leaves.
Yeah, because they get right down at the soil level and curl up around it and just nip it off. Mm-hmm. Typically, the top will be lying there when it's cutworm damage.
Oh, this is pretty much leaves.
Yeah, that sounds like a leaf eater more than a.
Would it be rabbits?
It could be a rabbit.
I have a resident cat, so I don't have too much problem with rabbits, but.
Cat isn't experimenting with vegetarianism.
Well, for a while I thought it was just seedlings, but lately I've noticed they also my coreopsis that is, you know, 10 almost a foot tall has holes in the leaves and small holes and also bergamot, kale.
Do you know what an earwig is?
I've seen pictures of them.
Yeah.
But are they under the soil or do they wander around on top?
Well, they like to, like if you were to lay a board down in the garden, they would like to hide under there. And
now, I've seen sow bugs under the board.
Sow bugs don't
they
usually
just eat dead stuff.
They're more roots.
Yeah. Yeah, they're more recyclers than live stuff eaters. Uh-huh. If you were to put one of those down and then go out early in the morning and lift it up,
And see what I've...
And if you've got a bunch of earwigs under there, they can be pretty voracious, and sometimes kind of unpredictably they can build up in an area and be really bad, and they'll climb up and eat most anything.
Yeah, it's a kind of a crescent-shaped bite out of a little leaf that isn't as big as your little fingernail. And I'm at a loss as to what to use on it. I suppose any of the bug dusts, maybe. Would be worth a try.
Yeah, well, yeah, a lot of the insects do, you know, the leaf feeders will do that. They just kind of take a bite and then kind of move their mouth back and forth, and what you get is sort of that circular pattern. But that doesn't narrow down what it is. You could put on some sort of a preventive kind of a spray and you know, when they take those bites.
Yeah, like a 7 or something like that.
It's you know, without knowing what it is, it's hard to know.
Well, that's
what's effective against
that's right.
It.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you for your time. I appreciate the program.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I suppose it depends if this is a flying insect, but if it's on the ground, diatomaceous earth, perhaps would that?
I know
help?
That works for slugs
for
really
slugs,
well,
but would it work for other crawlers?
I think it's more the surface of the body.
It's a soft-bodied thing, I think, that they bother more than things that have those prickly, hard legs like a lot of the insects do.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine Gardeners. Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt are our guests this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a telephone call if you've got a question about gardening. 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. That's the Champaign-Urbana area number. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let's go now to a listener on a cell phone, line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. My husband puts stuff on the grass, and I'm trying to talk him out of it, but I wonder if I should be planting tomatoes next to him. What I should limit him to putting on the grass is, can he put on fertilizer? I should have put weed killer on.
Okay. Near food crops.
Next to the, in the sidewalk and the grass. It's about 2 feet wide. And it's a wonderful, I put all mushroom mulch and mixed it with soil. It's wonderful soil, but I'm just concerned about what I'm eating.
Did you say there's a sidewalk in between the grass?
No.
It's no.
Sidewalk, the grass is right next to it.
Okay. Well, I would, if he's putting anything on, make sure it does not drift. And if it's granular, make sure he doesn't over-broadcast.
It doesn't drift. That I can stop from. But the question is, it's going to go into the ground, and is it going to contaminate my roots?
It wouldn't be systemic. I mean, it would...
Okay, that's what I was concerned about.
Yeah, it would depend what he's spraying. Is he spraying like 2,4-D for broadleaves or
no.
Putting down something?
But the root systems don't interconnect between.
Well, the thing that stops like crabgrass from germinating would have more soil action than
right.
than like a broadleaf control that might that be more likely to drift.
Because we don't have a crabgrass problem. He might do it in 100 feet away, but not here.
Okay.
Then it
doesn't sound too likely that it's going to be real problematic. The problem might come if he sees a dandelion and gets carried away and wants to get that in the middle of the summer when the tomatoes are right next to it or something.
Before he gets to them. Okay.
Okay.
Your help.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line two. Good afternoon.
Yes, you said something just a few minutes ago about something that will stop slugs, which would interest me, but I was calling to ask about, I'd heard at some point that if you lay down a copper barrier around plants, that stops slugs.
It's a copper flashing,
yes,
and you put some of it in the ground so the copper stays put, and then you lay... bend it over so it's horizontal with the ground. And it actually, when slugs, slime over it, when they crawl over it,
ooze.
It gives it a bit of an electrical charge is what I've had it explained to me. Now, it seems like an expensive way to go, though, copper flashing.
Well, but, right, because I didn't realize it was supposed to be flashing because I'd gotten some kind of tape about an inch and a half wide. And my question was,
and it's copper?
Pardon?
It's a complete copper substance?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, that might work. I mean, you just need to have it so that it's on the ground and it's in contact with the soil, so they have to crawl over it.
Mm-hmm.
So it may work.
Okay.
Use it in a flashing sort of way, though, so it's embedded in the ground,
Okay.
So close to the surface of the ground.
In the ground, I wouldn't have to nail it onto a board and then anything like
that. You want them to crawl over it. That's the whole idea. And then the diatomaceous earth could be a second line of attack, and you put and don't ever mulch hostas or things that really are a slug fest.
Uh-huh.
And you put the diatomaceous earth is parts of shell, and it's real sharp little pieces that won't hurt people, but you put that underneath the hosta, and when they crawl over it, it's challenging for them. It
lacerates their soft little bodies.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. That was well said.
Uh-huh. Okay. So
and subtle.
That under the hosta.
But
and
you don't ever want to mulch under hosta because they will hide underneath those.
The mulch.
The mulch, right.
Okay. That is probably the start of the whole problem.
Yes. They like to be warm. They like to be moist and dark and damp. And, mm-hmm. and so remove your mulch from around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you can mulch out away from it then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I just get a bunch of shells in the diatomaceous earth.
That's what diatomaceous earth is.
Mm-hmm. All shells.
It's the little dead bodies of little sea creatures with sharp...
Okay. And you can get it at any garden center. I mean, it's fairly common.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure I've seen it. So, okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, good luck. Okay. Let's talk with a listener in Charleston on line 4. Hello.
Hello. I have some... burning bush, and they're about 5 feet tall, and I want to know if it's too late to transplant them.
Whoa, it's getting into a little bit stressful time, at least with the heat. Now, if we go in through a cool spell, that might be easier, but you probably could root prune them now if you wanted to, and then wait for that cooler spell. But, wow, you'd have to take quite a big soil ball.
How immediate is the need to transplant them?
Well, I guess I could wait until fall.
Yeah, when the abscission layer is formed and the leaves are about to fall off anyway would be a better time to do that, because then you don't have the stress of the leaves losing moisture after you do it.
I see.
Because either in the spring before they leaf out or in the fall when they're about to lose their leaves anyway would be the better times to transplant them, especially when you're going to do a big one that hasn't necessarily been root pruned or anything and been in place for 4 or 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But come out from the trunk.
I was thinking of turning them back, but that wouldn't be enough.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll wait
until
fall.
Probably then. When you do transplant them anyway, prune them back a little bit, but come out about a couple feet, 18 inches from the, probably a couple feet if it's that big.
Start a couple feet back and
just
and see what you
down
find.
Into the soil, directly, vertically down.
Yeah, a good portion of the roots are going to be in the top foot or less of the soil.
And
if you stay out a ways and then can kind of get in under it.
Yeah.
And then once you've been all the way around it, you can kind of gently try to lift a little bit, and anything that goes straight down usually will give way then, and you get a pretty complete root system. I've had pretty good success transplanting burning bushes that were fairly large, as long as they were dormant or about to go dormant when I did it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's talk with another listener on a cell phone, line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
I have a problem. I have two oak trees in the parkway in front of my house, and the first part of my yard, every fall, all the acorns all over the place, and then even when I rake them up, all of these little cone-shaped holes have been appearing, and I'm assuming that they're the squirrels. So consequently, my grass gets depleted every fall and doesn't really come back very much. Is that what that is?
Well, it could be squirrels trying to bury the acorns.
Yeah, they're little holes about, two and a half inches across, and they're like little cones stuck into the ground. And they just appear, you know, every few inches all over the yard. And I thought it maybe was some strange insect. Sometimes they're even little holes. But are they burying the acorns, or are they... getting them out?
Well, if it's happening in the fall, you'd think they would be in a storage mode rather than a retrieval mode, but...
Yeah. Well, it happens throughout the winter, I think. I guess my point is that at any point in trying to grow any grass there...
Have you ever considered any type of ground cover instead?
Yeah, I have. It's the parkway, but of course it's over my yard, too. It extends about 10 feet into the yard. And there's a slope there, so it drains.
Mm-hmm. But you might think about that, because if there's any holes being dug in a ground cover, you really don't notice that.
Yeah. The other thing, does the acorns have any effect on the ability for grass to grow?
Just the digging of them would. No, there's nothing really toxic, I don't believe, in an acorn. It's more walnuts and things like that.
Yeah.
All right.
The tannins and oak leaves, if you had a thick leaf layer and let it sit there for a long time,
these are the oak trees that don't give up their leaves till everybody else does. So
no pin oak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so.
They have the brown leaves until spring.
Almost.
Yeah. Yeah, it's early spring.
So that shouldn't be a problem.
The other question I thought about was instead of seeding, that I would just get some turf and have it laid down. Maybe it would be more established, so it would be more resistant to anything digging them up.
They're going to do it. they will still dig through it. I mean, there is a little bit of a netting through there that holds the turf together when it's harvested, but it's not a major deterrent.
Okay.
But it may, you know, it may bounce the acorn off a little farther away, but if they're going to dig in there, too bad they can't reroute and make their habit somewhere else. But, you know, you might try it one time, but it'd be an expensive experiment if they do still dig through.
Yeah.
Not that expensive for a large area. I mean, if it's a small area, it wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, the big problem is several years ago I had to have the sewer dug up, and when they spread it out again, I couldn't get anything to grow back very well after that.
So. Yeah, the combination of the soil disturbance and the shade from the oaks and the digging, it's not a recipe for high-quality turf under the best of conditions.
All right, thank you very much.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a systemic herbicide for Japanese beetles that I was going to put on some ornamentals, some roses and peaches, but it also says that it can go on apple trees, and I'm concerned about that.
Right on the label it says it can be on apple trees?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, it would go in the leaves, correct, Chuck? I mean, that's what makes it systemic. But if it said that, and this is the window of time to do it, I've heard it from April to May.
Uh-huh.
So, wow. It does surprise me. I hadn't noticed that. But that's what we always tell you is read the label and follow that.
I was told, I mean, the Japanese beetles eat the fruit tree so badly, but they say not to put the systemics on those because they don't want to get those things into the fruit.
Sure. I would agree with you on that, but then again, I'm not an entomologist, so I'll have to talk to some entomologist friends to make sure. But usually it's on ornamental things, lindens and roses, porcelain vine.
That's supposed to go in by end of May then, huh?
I believe it's any time now because it takes a little while for it to go throughout the plant, and we've got a month or two. We have six weeks.
They come out like the end of June or around the 4th of July.
Do it yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area if you'd like to talk with Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. And you came with a question, Diane.
We had, for the first time, an email question sent to the station here, and I thought I would just address them real quickly. It's about a person who's moved into a new house, and they have two hydrangea shrubs, and they notice that there are other things with white snowball bunches of flowers that are flowering in other yards. Well, those have probably been, and they were wondering why theirs weren't, but hydrangeas do flower in the late summer. And that's why we suggest not pruning them because in the spring you'd prune off their flower bulb, their flower buds. And what you've probably been seeing is the viburnums. Viburnums have white snowball bunches of flowers. So I would just wait. The hydrangeas will be flowering July, August, maybe even a little bit later. And they'll be just fine. And I don't think that, you know, if there's no buds at all, then that could be a late frost. So just wait and see. But there's nothing you could have done except maybe covering it or siding it so it's really out of the wind. So just be on the lookout and wait for your hydrangeas for later in the summer. Then the other question is we have a low ground cover, creeping phlox. In some areas, it's been getting overrun by grass-like weeds that grow a foot high or higher. Any tips for keeping the ground cover weed-free is our only option to do what we've been doing, pulling each one at a time. And wow, I've got the same thing. Now, what you really need to do is a bit of a barrier between the aggressive grass. It's going to want to grow in and under and through the ground cover to keep it from going in there. But anything that's already in there, you're going to have to pull it out one at a time, except Chuck mentioned.
Well, if you're not against the idea of like a Roundup herbicide, Because the grass is growing up so much taller than the ground cover, creeping phlox never gets more than a couple of inches high. That would be, if you're ever going to use Roundup, the ideal situation to just lightly brush it on the grass that's sticking several inches above, and it only kills what it touches. So that would be a good way to maybe get the grass out that's already in there, in addition to doing some hand pulling as it shows up. And then the barrier is a good idea to keep it from coming back in, because a lot of those things have really aggressive rhizomes that just keep moving.
Okay, and brush it on with an old sponge or a paintbrush?
The sponge paintbrushes, uh-huh. The cheap sponge paintbrushes, yeah, I think work pretty well for that.
And there's a little wick, a Roundup applicator too.
Right.
But I know most people just use the brush
because of the way grass grows. You can kind of see that, just like you were painting the air above the ground cover, and make sure it doesn't drip on the ground cover.
And no wind.
That too.
Okay,
but it can be done.
All right, let's talk with another listener. Caller in Arcola on line one. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for listening. My question is. First of all, my wife and I just moved into a house that was an existing home, and the lawn and the yard had kind of overgrown a little. And I'm having a problem with my lawn in that there's all sorts of dips and little potholes, maybe about the size of your fist. So when I'm mowing my lawn, for example, the lawnmower is jumping all over the place like a boat at sea, and I'm just wondering if there's something I can do to kind of smooth out the surface. I thought about maybe using some topsoil in my broadcast spreader, or I don't know if I need to aerate or what I need to do.
Well, I think you're on the track. You will have to fill in when it drops down quite a little bit. You will have to fill in with some topsoil, and you probably could just hand broadcast, just that small amount of seed and get it to fill in. But that, at this time of the year, that would be the best way to go. It's not the ideal time to start grass seed, but it's going to be fine if you know the spots and keep it well watered. But I think that'd be a good way to go.
And depending on what kind of grass you have, if it's something that makes rhizomes, it will sprout back up through a fairly shallow top dressing of soil.
Okay, that's actually what I was wondering about, because in the bottom of these little potholes, the grass is growing just fine.
And that's right.
And maybe if they're too deep, you don't fill them in all the way at once and let the grass grow through half of it and then level it out later.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a good way to go.
And then as you get it up near level, some people will use a roller early in the spring, right after the frost goes out, when the soil has a little fluidity to it, and you can kind of level out minor problems at that point.
Okay. Can you just tell me really quick what a warning sign of overcompacted soil would be?
If you get something like knotweed coming in, there's a lot of flat growing weeds, like knotweed is one that comes to mind that is really indicative. I think goosegrass might be another that comes in when the soil is starting to get really compacted. And those are kind of danger signs that you might need to aerate.
And, it's hard to know about these grasses. I got a little book at Christmas time. It's a really good ID book, and I didn't write it, so I'm going to plug it. But Chuck and my colleague, Tom Voigt and Diane Peterson, they wrote a book on how to identify grasses and lawn grasses and weedy grasses, and it's through the Extension Service, I believe. But it's hard to know those grass weeds.
What's the title?
Oh, it's something about a key to. Now you're gonna. I just know it's identifying lawn weeds and their weedy counterparts or something like that.
They did some great photography,
it's really a good book.
It's a little book, but it's really packed with information.
So call your Extension office, or you can get that also online, I'm sure.
That might be the way to look. I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line two. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to plant a tree in a relatively large container on a patio outside. So the tree that will be maybe 4 to 6 feet tall. And my question is, which plants will have hardy enough roots to overwinter outside?
I'm thinking there are some arborvitae that if you grew a more upright one. Is this planter huge?
Well,
container?
Not real huge, but...
Is it bigger than a half barrel, say?
About this size. Well, is it realistic to have a plant hardy enough to live it outside?
Well, what you need when you plant a tree in a container is you need a nice large buffer of soil that is not going to, you know, have any plants overwintering. And that soil is the best buffer, the best insulator that you can have for the hardy tree that's in the center. So that's why we're asking the size of the container. Because arborvitae and sometimes, you know, some other tougher trees can overwinter, but there needs to be a good, would you say, foot or 18 inches out from the outside. I mean, it's really got to have some soil space around the edges.
So basically you are saying that I need probably 36 inches in diameter of the container.
And that's a big container.
But yeah. If I don't move it inside, it's fine.
That's right.
The other thing you might look at is, as far as winter hardiness goes, you might want to go at least something that's hardy, at least one plant hardiness zone north of here. So we're in 5B, so you'd want something that was hardy up into zone 4, which would give you a little margin for error, too. You don't want to plant something that's already marginally hardy here in that planter, because that's going to be even more susceptible to die in the planter.
But anyway, could you name any specific nice-looking decorative trees of the kind I'm talking about?
Did you care about evergreen or deciduous?
No, evergreen.
Evergreen, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I still think arborvitae comes to mind. They're pretty tough. Let's see.
Uh-huh.
How about a hemlock?
Maybe boxwoods? Boxwoods
are pretty marginal here already, so in a container I would say they would be pretty hard to... Unless you're willing to mulch or somehow do protective action around the container in the winter, I would think that would be a problem.
What about some more of the small-growing spruces?
A dwarf spruce or maybe a dwarf hemlock.
Uh-huh.
You know, something that's...
I would do a search on it and make sure, you know, that they're small enough size, that they're going to be in proportion to the container and the space.
Right, and things like spruces and hemlocks grow well up into the arboreal forest way north of here, so they should have that extra hardiness that I was suggesting.
Well, I planted some hemlocks several times, and it was a disaster here.
That was a disaster. Okay, well,
I don't know. Maybe
take those out of the mix.
Yeah,
I've had trouble.
Apparently, they don't have they don't like wet soil at all. They need very, very well-drained soil, apparently. Because I see them growing well in Champagne area only on very relatively high ground. If you can find the highest point in Champagne there, you'll see hemlock.
There aren't that many high points in Champagne, so
exactly.
we have limited sites for hemlocks, apparently.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, actually, it seems like then... In a container soil where you can modify it, it seems like you could put together a soil mix for the container that was extremely well drained and make it think it's on the top of a hill.
But thank you very much.
Okay,
hopefully we've got some ideas out there for that listener to think about. We have one caller waiting, and I'm going to get to this listener. This will be our last caller this afternoon. Before I take that call, though, Ed Kuser has come through the studio, and he says a tornado watch is in effect for portions of east central and southern Illinois and most of Indiana until 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, the tornado watch includes the following counties in Illinois: Clark, Cumberland, and Edgar. Stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest weather information and possible warnings. Now let's go to our listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
for the last caller. I just want to say I've had a pair of dwarf Alberta spruces in pots, not that large, about 12-inch pots, and then they're inside another larger plastic container, but I don't have it filled with anything to provide insulation. And they've
but
been there
the
many
double
years.
Pot. That's the key, yeah. Your double pot.
Yeah, but I don't have it filled with anything to insulate it. And I'm out in the country, in the wind, in the roughest conditions, and they've done beautifully, and they've been there many years. I think you can't beat dwarf Alberta spruce for pots.
Alberta makes them sound like they ought to be cold-hardy.
Yeah, they stay little, and they do great.
Great, thanks.
Uh-huh, bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Well, there, let's wrap it up. It's such a pleasure to see the two of you and talk with you. And I hope you'll come back later in the growing season, and we'll see what kind of questions are on our minds at that point.
See what kind of gardening year we have going for us.
Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland, and let me say that Chuck is the author with J.S. Vandermark of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest, and Diane is the co-author with Kristen Bolin of Perennials for the Landscape, and she's also the author of the textbook Floral Design and Interior Landscape Management, and you can see her on our companion television station, WILL-TV. She is the host of Illinois Gardener. The show airs live on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. and is repeated Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to seeing you next time.